Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off-limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Welcome to the Noom's podcast number 914. This episode brought to you by Squarespace. Listen, you probably need to make some type of a thing that you can put into the world. Whether maybe it's just an idea, or maybe it's a real product or a thing that is going to change your life, because then you'll be able to maybe quit your job and just focus on the thing that you love. So Squarespace will help you do that. And they will give you analytics to help you grow in real time so you can see if the thing is working or how to change it or how to evolve it. And if you have any questions about it, they have 24/7 customer support that's there to help. Think it, dream it, make it with Squarespace. Please head to squarespace.com for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, just use the offer code Nerdist and save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Now's the time. Make the thing. Make your thing happen. Thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. I'm going to be performing at Caroline's as part of New York Comedy Fest, November 8th through 10. Mike Furman's going to be with me.
That's gonna be a fun show.
It's gonna be a fun show. He's gonna do stuff. I'm gonna do stuff. We might do a song. Maybe we'll do a song together. But if you go to the New York Comedy Fest website, you can get tickets, or go to Caroline's website, you can get tickets for that as well. November 8th through 10. What do you got, Katie?
I got a couple cool things. No Master Builder on Reddit writes, my mom is participating in a Dancing with the Stars-like competition. It was originally going to be a fundraiser for the Raven Theater in Healdsburg, California, where the event is occurring, but they decided to donate all the proceeds to the Redwood Credit Union's North Bay Fire Relief Fund for all the fires that were up in Sonoma and Napa. He said, I would love it if folks could check out the site and see if they would like to contribute. Of course, if they want to vote for my mom, Carol York, and her dance partner, Mark Novak, that would be cool too. However, he hopes that people read all the vials and vote for who they want. If you also live in the North Bay and you want to go to this, you can buy tickets for the show on November 4th at 7:30 p.m. or the preview night on November 2nd. You can go to raventheater.org for more info. And then Luke writes, after constantly hearing Chris tell me to start my own thing, I've officially gone and done it. I started teaching bass and guitar lessons as a side hustle after graduating from York College of Pennsylvania with a degree in music. But I've finally taken my leap of faith, quitting my job, and started teaching lessons under my own name and studio. So if you live in that area, or he does Skype, it sounds like, so you can be anywhere and take lessons from him. You can go to AndersonBassAndGuitar.com for more info.
Excellent. This episode is Bruce Campbell, who I'm very proud to say has been on the podcast numerous times, and who is just the fucking best. God, he's great.
He's so funny.
God, he's so great.
Just the way he dresses is so great. Like, everything about him is so great.
He dresses like a yacht captain, and he looks fantastic. Like, it's not even funny. He just looks great.
He pulls it off. Like, if you saw him in regular clothes,
it'd be weird.
It'd be very weird.
It's like seeing your teacher in sweats at the grocery store. You're like, you're not supposed to be here. But he is such a wonderful man, and I adore him. And Bruce is the kind of guy that his energy sort of feels like, because Jonah sat in on this episode, Bruce feels like he could just be a member, like he could just do a hostful.
Yeah.
Like Bruce could be part of our immediate group.
He kind of seems like he could like show up to any family dinner and just fit in.
Yeah. He's just easygoing and wonderful and really sweet. And he has a new book out called Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. It's available wherever books are sold. And also, you know, you maybe probably want to watch Ash versus Evil Dead at the same time and then watch everything else. Lydia got to say hi because The Army of Darkness is like her favorite movie. And she bought a cast of... Like, she bought an Evil Ash mask that was used in the movie, and he signed it. And she was so excited. She was so excited. So thank you to Bruce Campbell. I will forever love you, Bruce Campbell. This episode is also brought to you by Casper, which is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. You're going to spend most of your life on a mattress.
Yeah, don't cheap out.
Don't cheap out. A third of it, if you're healthy about your sleep, a third of your life will be on a mattress. So they have three mattress models. They have the original Casper. They have the Wave. They have the Essential. And these are perfectly designed to soothe and cradle
the new ones. That's exciting.
That's right, of the geometry of your body. And the designs are very breathable, so it's going to help you sleep cool, regulate your body temperature throughout the night. And so you get in the mail, and it's just this tiny little package that you can't believe is
a... Because you got your mom one, right?
I got my mom one. It's like the greatest thing in the world for her. It changed her life.
Jonah has one, and he says it really is, like, because I asked him if he liked it, and he says it was really cool, and he really loves it.
Well, you're going to get 100 nights risk-free to sleep on it to see if you're going to love it, and you are, because that's how much they believe in the mattresses. If you don't like it in that time, send it back. That's all you got to do. Sleep ahead of the curve with Casper. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/nerdist. Use the offer code Nerdist at checkout, and terms and conditions apply to that, and enjoy your sleep. Enjoy your life. The better you sleep, the better your life is going to be. It is true. Worth the investment.
It absolutely is.
As much as I buy a lot of shit that I don't need, just fun little toys and gadgets and things like that, collectibles, I'm sure you do too. You always find the money for what's important to you. Take care of your sleep health because it will affect the rest of your life. Thanks to Casper for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is Bruce Campbell, episode 914. Katie, let's roll it there.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
These are the West croissants. This is the East Wing.
Jenkins, read the manual more carefully next time. Thank you. Croquet in the back in 10?
Poor Jenkins has been plotting. Like, Jenkins just hates his life. Jenkins
is resigned by now, though.
He is not a happy man.
Because Jenkins knew what he was getting into when he said yes, didn't he, Jenkins?
He knew. He did it anyway.
I know my father treated you better. But he's gone now, isn't he, Jenkins?
I know you and my father were in the war together, but...
But that's the only bond between you.
I am personally... you're beneath me. And...
As long as we understand that, we're going to get along wonderfully. Bring the car around at 10. It's always after a major argument. It's just, let's get on to business now.
By the way, I think maybe Jenkins was never officially a butler. He was just the dad's friend. But the son just treated him like he worked there the entire time. I like what's forming here.
That's right. The guy's like,
I don't work for you technically, but he still brings him croissants. What are you doing in town? I don't know why I always assume.
Book touring.
You're book touring.
Yeah, our 35 city book tour. We're near. What city are we on? 30? Got like five more to go. Oh. Five more filthy, ragged American cities to visit. Before we go crawling home to the wonderfulness of hopefully our state that is not completely caught on fire.
Oh my God!
We had fires north of us, south of us, east and west. It was Los Angeles in 1952. My view. I couldn't see Dutchman Peak. that's a sad day, sir.
That's where you know, and this the fires are the situation is real. We up here in Griffith Park.
Yeah,
it's rough. Like it, and we always. Are on alert, and there was one maybe 9 years ago. There was one.
You guys need to form a bucket brigade.
Just like the old days.
I want to see these Hollywood producers out here in these hills in their undies. Come on, pass the bucket, Joe. Faster.
And Spielberg. Give me that
pick
bucket.
Up the slack. Shut up, Katzenberg. I'm doing the best I can.
This was a bad idea. None of us are really physical people.
I didn't sign on to this.
That's why we're directors.
My lawyer made this deal.
Who has the rights to this bucket brigade?
I'm shutting this down right
now.
They
don't actually ever put the fire out. They just argue about who has the rights to the brigade as everything burns.
Next year, I'm running this show.
There won't be a next year. Everything's gone. It's amazing that no matter how technologically advanced we are, no matter how advanced we are as a civilization, we still get taken out by fires,
floods,
tornadoes, hurricanes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
It's coming.
It's we're not that in control at all.
I don't think so. You know, the levees were a great idea on paper,
but
we've had some flooding. We don't like flooding. We're gonna corral the water. My wife and I saw a promo off the 5 freeway at one of these government installations. Come and see how the water was brought to California.
Mm-hmm.
And they superimposed wild horses running. We're going to corral the water like horses.
Of course.
And so, yeah, they corral it until the next big-ass flood. And then my favorite thing is they go, flood the farmland first. Because
you
can't flood the city.
Oh, no.
We can't flood New Orleans. We're going to flood everything around New Orleans.
Right.
And then we're going to flood New Orleans.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's an illusion.
We haven't really figured it out. And
well,
I think
it's an illusion.
We just need to accept, what is it, the 7 steps of whatever it is. Of we have to accept the fact that we don't know.
What are the 7 steps?
Isn't it something of how you heal from,
oh, that
from
death
bad
and dying?
Mistakes? It's either that or it's toward recovery. We need to say that we're...
Yeah, there's denial, acceptance, blame Jenkins.
Yeah.
It's number 3.
Let's start with that number 1, Jenkins. You should have warned me that this fire was coming. I think we should accept the fact we can't control it. Just get ready for it. Why don't we get ready for it, though? I'm thinning every acre of my property in Oregon because I know the big mama's coming.
Yeah.
I want that sucker to, quote, lay down on my property.
Well, but in Oregon, too, you also have weather, which we don't really have here in Los Angeles. So
we do. We have a jet stream. I love looking at satellite pictures now. There's basically a river. It's a river of moisture that flows directly off the coast into my state entire winter.
Wow.
Which is mostly good. Last winter, we had the most wicked snowpack we've had in 20 years. And then the driest summer ever, and then everything lit on fire.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jonah Ray!
Hello!
Yes, I'm glad to have your guys' podcast. Thanks for
having me. Hello. So, listen, it's always nice to help out a fan and have someone come sit in on the podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, how you doing?
Hi.
Hello,
nice,
sir.
Nice to
what's going on?
I don't know if you remember Jonah.
Yeah.
He's been on the...
Yeah, we did
a
sketch.
We go way back.
We
was on stage.
Yes, we were on stage, and then we did a sketch once when I was working at The Soup.
That's right.
Writing at The Soup.
This is my wife, Ida.
Hi, nice
my homie
to meet
Mike
you.
Down there.
Hi,
how's
nice
it
to
going?
Meet you.
Now, is Mike the Jenkins of the situation?
Mike is my current Jenkins. He's as close to Jenkins as I can get, but I can never make him do what I need Jenkins to actually do. Mike would not do what I need Jenkins to do.
Just dispose of things.
So Mike is not actually the guy. He's not the right guy. I'm going to fire him pretty soon.
Okay. Well, listen, there is actually no podcast. This is an intervention for Mike.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, I know. We're all here to take
sorry.
Care of
sorry how my...
Why do you put up with this abuse? Yeah.
I'm sorry that my wife forced me to mistreat you this way.
Oh, very clever.
Right?
See very
how
slick.
I wove that around my finger?
Very
is that
slick.
A callback to something I wasn't here
no,
for?
No, no, no. Oh, well, you missed a whole backstory with Jenkins... The Jenkins we determined.
I'll
really
just
quick.
Listen to the
well,
podcast.
Look, okay,
yeah,
we're on a.
No, you won't.
We're on a big book tour, and we have a lot of time in the car, so we have started to play a game.
What's the game?
It's the $250 million game.
Okay,
you got 250 mil after taxes. All that crap's done. No one's coming for any penny of it.
Great,
it's yours in your pocket. So, what is the lifestyle? What are the changes? What is your hey, lady moment where no one can say that's a bad idea. Like you take $60 million and you go, you can't tell me that any of this is wrong what I'm about to do with this. Like, do you take how much of that money do you take for that? Like the crazy boat where, you know, oh, this is – or do you take the $250 million, buy stuff, but you're only buying stuff that you can make money off of? It's only real estate. You can sell it. You're only starting a company with that money. That you're not really changing your lifestyle necessarily. There's so many ways to go with 200. And so it started with Jenkins.
Okay.
My first thing was I got Jenkins now.
You got a Jenkins.
And Jenkins has got the electric bikes waiting outside.
Yep.
And I'm texting him and let's go. Tire pressure checked. Here we go.
Gosh, I don't know. I would probably just give all that money to, you know, some type of relief effort for.
No, you wouldn't.
Okay. All right.
Nope. Because we've got past those conversations in the car. It starts with that.
Oh, the poor people in the world. I'll help them all.
You're not going to help anybody.
It'll trickle down to them eventually.
Yeah, that's right.
If I buy stuff,
you know,
it affects the economy in a roundabout way.
Reagan was right.
He was.
If I keep it all, it'll help everyone.
So I think you get past the charitable moment, and then you get to the real part of what would you really do?
Boy, with 250.
250 mil clear.
Well, you know what's crazy is that at a certain, you know, people think they want an amount of money like that, but after a certain point, they don't. It doesn't really change the quality of their life.
Chris, are you saying mo money, mo problems?
Moby, I am. I think maybe. What would I do? Well,
so you feel there's a plateau?
I think there's
somewhere. About above 50, do you plateau?
It's a plateau, but just a little one. Just
because
a little
what
plateau.
Do you do about now? The other thing is overhead too. You got your 250, but that's all you got. If your overhead starts to go Tyson-ish, then you could blow that.
So don't build a private zoo.
Don't buy the jet. Do jet share.
Jet share.
So you're still jetting.
Yeah. But you're not.
No, you're not maintaining.
Do you think you could spend $250 million in your lifetime?
Oh, in a year. Oh, watch me, man.
On what?
I would light this place up.
Didn't you see Brewster's Millions? It's hard to spend money.
But he had to spend it without having any assets to show for it.
Oh, because
so it wasn't just spending it. He had to spend it, and he couldn't have anything to show for it.
That's right.
I'd have something to show for.
Well, so what happens this year? That first year, what are you blowing it on?
Land.
Okay, land. A lot of land. But that appreciates.
I'm getting all kinds of land.
Just all Oregon land?
No.
Where?
Montana, Wyoming.
Nice.
Land.
All right.
Near water. I think water is the more important thing. A fresh water supply is going to be very necessary.
I would actually do the following. I would get a one-acre plot in every state so I could pull up my trailer and go, yep, that's me hanging out at the property. Going to Arkansas next.
Where was
that property again?
And you
have a little 3x5 cards that Jenkins draws up for you.
Of the
address. And you tell Jenkins where you want to go next.
God, he hates his life. Ah, that fucking Jenkins. I like this. This is Bruce's Millions. This is what Bruce does with millions.
That's what you do when you're bored on a book tour. And you're driving through Kentucky. Lexington's coming up.
Here's my acre.
We did find interesting stuff. This is why road trips are good.
Yeah.
Driving along between, it was in Arizona, mm-hmm. between Tucson and Phoenix, mm-hmm. past a sign, site of Tom Mix's death.
Who's Tom Mix?
Tom Mix, the old-timey Western star.
Oh.
He was like a kind of silent movie guy. Big. He would be, I don't know who he would be today, but he very popular, Tom Mix.
And that's just like, he died right over there.
Yeah, and when first we thought, oh, well, he must have had a homestead here in Arizona. He played a cowboy. Maybe he was a real rancher.
Yeah.
But no, it turns out it was a car accident that happened right there.
Oh, no.
And then you go to read more, and they've done a little, it's a museum to Tom Mix made with Tupperware.
What?
Yeah, little laminated articles in the Tupperware. In case you want to read about Tom Mix, here's this yellowish article. Tom Mix died today in an accident. And then you keep reading. Just before the accident, apparently he had stopped off to see some friends and gambled just a little bit.
Just a touch.
There may have been some alcohol involved, but he then took off. And it was he smashed into a road construction crew. Apparently he didn't see a road construction crew. And crashed his very fancy car.
They're very sneaky. You know, they just jump right out. The road gets, before you know it,
and
they
supposedly
just
the crash didn't kill him. It was a box full of silver coins that fell off the back of the car and crushed his neck that killed him.
Well, that's a...
That's what you learn on road trips, man. Yeah. Tom Mix.
But isn't that a great metaphor for all this money that you're spending that it's ultimately going to crush your neck?
The moral is don't get it in silver.
Don't get it in coins.
It's too heavy.
You got to be careful. Don't be Tom Mix.
Yeah. We got to be careful what you have in your car. I was in a car accident once, rolled my truck, but I was moving at the time, had a lot of cutlery in the passenger seat next to me.
Nice.
And knives like were flying everywhere when I rolled my car, and I got like scratches on my arms from it. And when the paramedic came to my window, he's like, "Are you okay?" I was like, "I think so." And then he looks around, he's like, "Any of these knives hit you?" And I was just like,
"That's a real story.
That's a real story. I didn't
know that."
Is there a plaque where that happened?
Yeah, it's like right where the 110, the 405.
He may have stopped off for a little gambling and a little
something first,
something out of there. But you know, if you get an acre in every state, that's not going to take the whole 250 mil.
Oh no, because some of those acres, like Arkansas, that's a $1,200 acre.
Yeah,
but that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to blow all my money. I just want, I'm going to do a bunch of weird stuff.
Yeah.
Jenkins is going to prep every single rail to trail mile in the United States where they've converted old rail lines to bike paths.
Yeah.
Because I don't ride with cars. I don't do cars.
Okay.
But Jenkins is going to give me he's going to plot the tour.
He's going to take care of it.
Yeah. And it will be electric bikes because sometimes you need a little help.
What about this? What if I did build a zoo? But all the animals were taxidermy. But then I hired a bunch of people to just be there and pretend.
Overhead.
Really?
Terrible overhead.
But they're already, the animals are dead, so you're not, you don't have to.
People are.
The payroll taxes will kill you.
Shit.
Yeah.
But just
the zookeeper's unhappy.
But
they're striking.
And what are the people going to do? Like make animal noises for the appropriate animal?
No, it's so that other people who don't know what the gag is, they show up thinking it's a zoo, but everyone else is pretending like all the animals are fine. And it's just to fuck with the handful of people who just stumble across this zoo, not realizing that it's that they're actually all taxidermy.
Seems like a lot of work.
But it's $250 million. What am I supposed to do with it?
I don't know.
Get information.
Yeah, there you go.
I would go to Washington, D.C., and then I'd have it in raw cash at that point, $1,000 bills. And I would just find a couple guys and go, "Come on, man. Show me the document." And they're like, "What document?
Do you remember now?"
And you go, "Any clearer?"
Yep. That's actually a great idea.
And just see if you can see the special bullet that did something or the something-something document that proves the something-something. Find your favorite conspiracy and try and get to the bottom of it with raw cash.
That, by the way, is a phenomenal game show that you've just created, which is that you...
Bribe them all.
How it's sending people into the world and seeing how much information they can bribe people to
how
get.
How much corruption how can much, you find?
And, you know, of course you get more points if the information is juicier. Yeah. You know, it's like, and what are the dollar? Oh, you didn't. You only had to go up to a grand to find out.
It just sounds like you're just training lobbyists.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, I guess ultimately that's exactly what it is.
Or taking them down.
Taking them down from the inside. You got to rage within the machine.
Crazy
so
like
what
a fox.
So what are we expecting from the JFK documents that are supposedly...
That were scheduled to be released 25 years ago?
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably nothing. Every time they have like a big build-up, it's just nothing.
Geraldo should be the MC of it.
Yeah.
"We're going to reveal the documents now." Yeah,
Geraldo, what happened to your voice?
It's been a long time. I've been on the air a long time. I'm dead on the inside.
I'm as empty as Al Capone's mouth.
Someone said that what they thought the document might reveal is there's a theory that I hadn't heard because I'm not super into the JFK theory, conspiracy theories, that it was the Secret Service guy that turned around to shoot back at where the bullets were coming from and shot him because it was consistent, you know, like the wound was consistent with where that guy was standing, and that was the cover up.
Oh, but it was 100% mob hit.
Yeah,
100% mob hit.
100%. Kennedy and what was the guy who was the head of the mafia? Giancarlo Di Laurio.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They were both stupid.
I'm sorry, your Italian has plateaued.
It has plateaued terribly.
What a cosmopolitan episode.
We're so international.
So they were both stupid the same woman.
Okay.
And that's a bozo no-no.
Marilyn?
Oh.
Kennedy is doing what? Excuse me. He's doing what?
So they shot him.
It's a Joe Pesci scene.
They shot him over a stup?
Oh, no doubt about it. No, it's a double stup.
Okay.
Because.
A stup.
hey, we helped use guys get elected.
Yeah.
Did we not?
Yeah.
With our broken noses in Chicago. Hey, Mr. Kennedy, how'd that work for you? Pretty good, didn't it, with the Teamsters and the associate fellas with that. Bobby comes in. First thing he does is attack the mafia.
Right.
Immediately.
Right.
And like with great fanfare.
Right.
So there's a double shtup going on. You don't double shtup nobody.
No. Mm.
So they capped him. They got some guys from Italy, came in, set up shop, pop, pop. Because look, why on earth with Jack Ruby? he's a club owner.
Right.
Yeah.
He got the call. Hey, Jack, it's time. Call it in. Remember that little favor you owed me? Cap this mook.
But the mook is the president.
No. Cap.
Oh, Cap Lee Harvey
Cap
Oswald. Yeah.
Why would Jack? Is he a patriot? Is that why he shot the guy?
He was a.
Yeah.
You shot my president. No, it was a favor he had called in by Sam Giancarlo Giotto. And that's what happened. This is 100% of my bit.
I had forgotten about Sam Giancarlo
Giotto.
Also, you know, just seeing some of the character work here, I'm upset that you don't play more mobsters. I think it's something you need to explore.
Well, you gotta. Wouldn't you like to see the moment when they tell that guy that Kennedy is shtupping his lady?
Yeah.
It's the one. Excuse me?
Right.
I'm sorry. I don't think I heard you correctly. Excuse me? Could you repeat that a little clearer? And then he would just shoot the guy.
Yeah.
For telling him that.
Shooting the messenger.
He knew
sure.
too much.
Yeah, exactly. That was upset.
That's my feeling. I'm not a conspiracy guy either. But when I heard that one from one person, I went, that makes the most sense of anything yet.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's just I'm just not sure that the government is organized. Organized crime was organized.
That's what I think.
It was not as organized to do.
Boy, was my dad mad at that JFK movie.
He didn't like it?
Now young children all across America are going to think that there were. Well, it was a single bullet because the Warren Commission said that it was a single shooter. So that's what I'm going with.
So he's just like whatever the Warren
Don't
Commission
mess with is. History like that. Don't put funny ideas in people's heads.
Right.
That this incomplete commission, you know. But I have to say, the movie, even though it is Oliver Stone taking crazy pills and making a movie.
Yep.
It's a great movie, actually.
Yeah. It's a great.
The one bullet story of like, what would this bullet have had to do if it was only one bullet? The crazy route of the bullet? There are about two or three things in that movie where you go, yeah, Oliver Stone's crazy, but that's kind of weird.
Crazy, and then he got literally the most famous people in entertainment
to
all go, yeah, I'll do that. But that's why it'd be so crazy if it was just the Secret Service that shot him by accident. Yeah. It's like this whole...
Do you know some directors get all the big folks? I think Oliver Stone can make a call any day and get big schmoes on it because I think he tries to make dynamic stuff.
Yeah.
That they know they're going to be in for a crazy making experience, but every so often you get a platoon out of it.
Yeah.
Well,
he can make the call and get Putin.
He could get. He probably could.
He
actually.
Did. He did a documentary around.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What do you say, Putin?
Yeah.
Hey, Cold War's over. What do you say?
Come on.
Do we know what he sounds like, Oliver Stone?
I do. I do actually. He's been on the podcast.
Ah.
He has he's one of these kinds of voices, Dad. He's this guy.
Yeah, he's
this guy down here.
Well, I'm reading Vietnam right now, that ridiculous sized book based on the ridiculous sized documentary that's out now.
And what does it say?
It's holy crap, holy. Just to think of, you know, he was in the war, and just thinking of now getting more familiar where they broke the country into different like zones, and that you were assigned to like a zone, very. Wow, gnarly. Vietnam is the definition of gnarly. Gnarly fighting.
And you were too young to have gone to.
You know, I was 68, the worst year of the war, I was 10.
Yeah.
So, like when I was in my teens, I'd see flickering images, you know, CBS type images, but it was pretty much held away. I didn't really see it.
Did you see anyone coming back from it though? Do you remember any of that?
My brother got nervous. He was 6 years older than me, so he got a little nervous, but his number didn't quite come up because they kept changing the number. They're like, okay, we need more guys. We only need 10,000. I thought, no, we meant 100,000. So it got closer and closer to the average Joe. At first, it was just this crazy thing about war. Poor people. That's who goes first.
Yeah.
You're Jones, get in there. You're going. You and everybody on your block. Anyone in college didn't have to go. And then they were like, okay, we need college people too. Then it was anyone who's married. So people got married immediately. No, no, it's anyone who's got a kid. So everyone started having kids to not go once they discovered what a nightmare war it was.
I mean, it's insane to think. When I think of an 18-year-old, like my nephew is 18 and he's a kid. He's just like a baby.
Yes.
So you just think like, you know, this kid, they're like, get over there.
There's a whole theory behind that though. Saw the troops in Iraq in 2009, was talking with some commander on top of one of these bases, and he goes, you know, we got about a 4-year window, 18 to 22. Between 18 and 22, you can point to the top of that hill and go, bad guys are up there. Go get them, son. Yep, let's go. Let's get those bad guys. And after 22, you go, hey, the first three times we went up that hill, that kind of sucked.
Yeah.
You think that's is that still going to work, you think, boss?
Of course.
Yeah. So before Windows, for 4 years, there's a black and white world. There's good guys and bad guys.
Do you think that's why there's like that? That's like the, when you sign up, you get 4 years, you're in there. Because it's like all the guys I knew growing up, it's like the guys that joined the military. Was like,
maybe so. They wise up after 4 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. They start to see the reality of it, you know.
Damn.
Yeah.
But that's why you're going to take this money that you're going to definitely going to get.
Yep. $250 million. Clear.
And you're going to give it to all the 18-year-olds.
To make movies.
About?
Not war.
Alternates?
To make war movies.
JFK
war
theories.
Yes. To glorify war.
Okay. Taking notes. Taking notes.
You're talking like your multi-state tour was all in a car. Did you fly to any of these places or are you just driving?
We did a lot of driving because I liked that aspect. You get a little more sense of a tour of where you are. Physically, geographically.
It is like the idea of driving across country always sounds great, and then you do it.
It does. It's not all it's cracked up.
No, you get about halfway into it, and you realize I am in a prison without walls because in as far as I can see, there's just corn.
Well, interstates suck.
Right.
But like when you're on the highway, it's like, you know, like I'd rather to go to San Francisco, I'd rather take the 101 than the 5. Because it's like you're driving through towns, it's more interesting. But it's like when you're on an interstate, you're in the middle of nowhere, and it's just, the entire country looks the same.
Well, so you try and spice it up. So we'll do a lot of two-lane blacktops. We'll take the old Route 50 between so-and-so and so-and-so.
Nice.
And sometimes regret it horribly.
But
because you're behind every giant, you know, combine machine that can only go 12 miles an hour. And you take a half an hour to pass it. Then you stop at the drugstore to get something. And you watch the thing go lumbering past. And you go, oh, dear God. Now we have to pass it again.
But how else would you have found out about Tom Mix other than using the internet?
Good point.
Other than just looking it up and finding out.
To learn about his dubious death.
It really blows me away to think that when I was a kid, my dad really did not like flying. And so we drove a lot of places. To just think that there was a time not that long ago where you didn't know what the condition of the town was going to be where you went or the hotel or you stopped and asked people you didn't know, how do I get to this thing? And
absolutely.
They told you. And
you went through every town. If you took the cool thing about old routes were the ones that went through every town. And when they put the freeway system in, it pretty much, you could tell when that town died, the year that that town died was the year that they built that thing to go past the town.
Well, yeah. Like if you go to,
it's all through the 50s, all these towns all died.
Route 66.
Well, that's what's, wasn't like Psycho, like had like a reference to that. Like the motel started doing poorly when there was like a freeway that they made.
And then guys like Colonel Sanders went, I got a great idea. I'm going to bring the restaurant to the interlopes, to the clover leaf.
Yep. Yeah. That was very smart.
It was very smart.
And then
so then
the
they didn't have to go
there.
All the way into town, which could be 5 miles away from the interstate.
Yeah.
Now they could just go, baby, go.
How many Cracker Barrels did you stop at?
Lots, because I wanted those little peanut logs.
Yeah.
Those were pretty good.
Yeah.
They were deadly even then.
Yeah, they all. I remember having to entertain myself in the back of a car with like a coloring book or just like a book with just word games.
I had sunglasses that you could pop the lenses out and put psychedelic lenses in them.
Well, that
nice.
Hours of
done.
Fun.
Done.
That's a whole day.
All day. We were driving in northern Michigan and there were nothing but tree stumps. But I could put these cosmic lenses on and go, now they're pink tree stumps. And then we keep seeing signs for Little Barrel.
What's Little Barrel?
Little Barrel, 2 miles. And eventually, after about four of those, where's this Little Barrel? Where is this dumb town? They keep saying it's 2 miles away. That's when I realized my entire family needed glasses because it was Litter Barrel 2 miles away. Because back then, they, you know, you threw your garbage out the windows.
Right.
Before the campaign of the Native American with the glycerin tear. Tear.
Yeah, the glycerin
yeah.
tear.
Oh, yeah, that was totally a glycerin tear. They're not going to say be sad on cue.
He's not going to, no.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and to make that commercial, they still had to throw garbage at his feet.
They still did.
Yeah, so maybe he did cry at first, and then it just became... Maybe that was just grease that splattered up from the garbage.
You know what's beautiful, though? Even after you found out it was a litter barrel, no less exciting to stop and get a picture with it, to see the majesty of
there
the litter
barrel.
There
was some very scenic litter barrels up by Lake Michigan.
Yep.
Yeah, with the great Sleeping Bear sand dunes in the background.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, we threw out the remnants from everything was cherries up there. So you got cherry pie, cherry drinks. It was all cherries, fresh cherries. It was the cherry capital.
And what
Traverse City, Michigan.
What are some of your favorite places to stop? If someone's driving across America,
hands down, Oregon Trail.
Okay,
you must see the ruts of the Oregon Trail. In Wyoming, has the most pristine collection of original ruts from the freaking Oregon Trail. You look at it and you go, "There's no question about it. I'm looking at history right in front of my freaking face." Wow. So many wagons went over these areas that they wore 3 feet deep ruts in the sandstone. And that's a lot of wagons.
Yeah.
So you start to get a sense, and you see these, they have a signature rock.
Mm-hmm.
Wagon Master, 1846. And then you see John Klein, 1992. It's like scratched in there too.
Jenkins,
so,
please kill me.
Jenkins, yeah. Please airbrush that away from the Wagon Master. So they put up the cheesy fencing now so you can't reach the signature rock because too many Joes have come in there and put their own mark.
Of course.
Yeah, as you would.
As you would to, yes, as you would to a sully historical, a piece of, yeah, exactly, piece. Nature.
Yeah.
Of course, you got to put your fucking your handprint
on. You know what? This is really cool. Let's wreck it.
Let's wreck it. But so I'm going to wreck
the Oregon Trail for sure.
You're not so tough, Oregon Trail. I wasn't so hard. Just wrote my name on it. What's the big deal?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not that hard.
And deserts. Go see we have fantastic, Nevada. Northwestern Nevada, nobody's there.
Utah is pretty incredible.
Utah is unbelievable.
It's like driving across another planet. Have you driven across Utah?
No. Holy well, I've driven to Salt Lake.
Shit.
Yeah.
I made a movie there, Sundown, A Vampire in Retreat.
Yep.
In 1988, which was like pre-ATMs and everything there. The great thing about Moab, Utah, it's since been overrun with outdoor enthusiasts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I take my car, my crappy car, and drive it on these old uranium roads that mm-hmm. they put in the 50s. Because we need uranium to defeat the communists. So they bulldoze thousands of miles of these roads across BLM land, government land. So I take my car and drive it as far as I could. When it got really gnarly, I'd park it, take my bike out, ride that as far as I could ride it. Then when that got gnarly, I just would throw the bike down because it was no one going to take my bike. And then I would just walk as far as I could with no water, which was really smart. Really smart. But Utah, you could get lost. There's acres and acres of government land where there's nobody lives there.
Yeah. And it all looks the same.
Yeah.
But it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's just the most it just looks like everything's just like an oil painting in every direction. It just looks like an oil painting.
It is. And then you look down in a ravine and see a cow that's dying in a ravine. That's stuck there in a wilderness where I hiked in Utah. You can still graze cattle. But in the West, you need 100 acres per head of cattle in order to give them enough forage because there's nothing there. You've seen Utah.
Yeah.
There's nothing to eat. So we have to have 100 acres per head of cattle. So there's cattle where they shouldn't be, and like in this ravine. Because you look down and you go, okay, well, no one's coming to get that thing.
I think that cow stooped that guy's girl. I think that's what it was. Like that cow.
So it was revenge. It was,
so yeah.
You come to Don Scolioli?
Excuse me? Excuse
that
me?
That almost turned into scoliosis.
Scoliosio.
He's just bent over all the time.
What are you trying to tell me? I know I can't stand up straight.
Well, they changed it at Ellis Island. It was scoliosio.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds too like I'm crippled or something.
Change it to Smithiosio.
Why did you decide to write a book?
The last 15 years, a lot of crazy stuff has transpired. The industry's gone weird and different now.
It has.
Everyone's wearing tights, and they fly around and
beat the crap out of each other.
Yeah, and throw each other through buildings.
All the buildings.
Every character. See on the call sheet today, Wonder Woman, it's your building day. You're going through a building. Okay, that's good. It was Hulk last week.
You're going to take this building out over here?
Yeah.
I have to say, a lot of actors will look at those actors up there and they'll go, Robert Downey Jr., you have an amazing life, an amazing career. And I'm like, he's never going to take that stupid suit off. He's going to be on a green screen set looking at tennis balls for the next decade.
Well, his in particular...
what you wish for, Bobby.
But his in particular is pretty great because the Iron Man suit... He basically, they're just shooting him from the neck up.
Oh, no. They're shooting him when he takes the helmet off. That's Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the helmet is on, it's Joe Stinkowitz.
No, right. But those shots when he's in the Iron Man
head, he does
that with a GoPro in his apartment.
It just is in his
That's
apartment.
On Saturday. Yeah. Absolutely. You got until 10 a.m. and then I got to go walk my dog.
Yeah, just say just put the hat rig on him and it's just right
just
there.
Just say Jarvis a couple times. Yeah. And then, yeah.
But those movies, I will say this, having been an actor who... has been in a lot of genre stuff that is monsters and special effects, it requires a certain type of acting that can be repetitive and not that creative. You're acting per storyboard.
Right.
These guys bring in truckloads of storyboards. What are we doing today, pal? Storyboard number 418B through 22, if we're lucky, maybe 23.
Acting.
So, and when you show up, there's nothing to look at.
Yeah.
And there's guys with, literally tennis balls on sticks that you follow this way and that way. And ready and shake. So that's what you're hearing all day. You're hearing strange cues and things. There's no real sense of in Ash vs. Evil Dead in 3 seasons, there's not been one scene sitting 2 people at a table talking.
Yeah. Well, you can't.
No, because halfway through the conversation, a demon has to attack. Something has to go. So it's all rope-a-dope. If you have a scene like that, you're only doing it just to make people go, are they just talking? And then,
Well, also, Ash vs. Evil Dead is like, episodes are, 25 minutes?
They're 30 minutes.
They're 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And so that's really just enough time to accomplish like one thing in each episode, and then you've got to fight a monster. It's like you're just coming off the last adventure, and then you got to establish the new adventure, and then you got to fight the thing, and then the episode's over.
It's over. And Rob Tappert, my producing partner who produces the show, he recommended the half hour. We thought, geez, I don't know, it seems quick. But now that we're doing it, the half hour seems totally right, because right as you start to look at your watch, the end credits are
right.
Done. I think it fits sort of a modern attention span. And it also keeps the pace of the show. The Walking Dead, man, there's no rat-a-tat-tat dialogue in that show. And this is my brother's show. I'll never say anything bad about that show. But the pace of it is going to be the pace of it because it's an hour long.
Right.
So you are going to have scenes at the table. How's everything going?
Yeah.
Well... pretty good, I guess. How's it going for you?
Still good.
I'm a little worried about Joe. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have scenes like that. Do you want scenes like that with Ash?
You just got to get it.
Those scenes are always just like, we have a really expensive stunt coming up.
we had to shoot 2 scenes without anything happening.
Because
3 scenes from now, it's going to get big.
But also, it's a relief because if you're binge-watching the show and you go, oh, it's a half-hour show. I can catch up with this in an afternoon. You know, I just watch it all.
Yeah. Oh, if you're a binger, we're easy money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do a whole season in, 5 hours.
Yeah. 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 I keep falling behind on Game of Thrones because I'm like, I don't have 10 hours.
It's an investment.
It is. Yeah. It's a real investment.
It really is.
It's a real investment.
Cool show.
yeah, it's all right if you like that sort of thing.
I like this sort of classy production.
Yeah. Like,
with like super good actors
production.
And great scripts and, great. You know, real location. Yeah, yeah, if you like all that cool photography.
But if you're not into all that bullshit,
yeah.
I guess it's all right. Yeah. I don't know if it's that sort of thing. But are you guys doing another season? Do you know?
It's up to the TV gods now.
The TV gods.
We've done all of our deal. We've shot season 3. It's coming out February 25th.
Later than usual.
It is, by 6 months. They sort of swapped us with Outlander, their popular show.
Right.
They're trying us in a new slot because fall is pretty brutal by all accounts,
yeah.
as far as a slot for an actual TV show. So they think maybe when people want to hang themselves in late February, they'll go, okay, turn on Ash vs. Evil Dead. At least that guy's got it as bad as we do up here in Nebraska.
I'll not hang myself for 5 hours.
5 hours while I binge. All right. Start up the VCR.
Well, I mean, just the idea that anyone would watch anything when it airs is so crazy.
It's too antiquated. It needs to, well, for us, it's illegal downloading.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's what gets you.
That's what I want. Every time Starz goes, the numbers are a little off. I'm like, not the pirated numbers.
Yeah, those,
those are
right.
sky high.
Yeah. The most important show.
We're number one. So it's like, and the funny thing is, you really do need to find out, why is that happening? How is that happening? How can we track that? How can we make money off of that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they can just figure out a way to make money off of illegal downloads, we'd be fine.
Well, that was the idea with iTunes. It's like if these shows on premium channels would just like the next day you can buy or rent the episode on iTunes or Amazon, I think that would, you know, that would get rid of a lot of, not all piracy, but it would just be like you'd make another chunk of change.
I think,
out
don't
of
they
it.
Do that in Europe? They do, bam, everything goes.
Oh, really?
To fight piracy. They yeah. should. They should release everything everywhere on the same day.
But I also think there are certain shows that that nerds in particular enjoy, and nerds are the ones who are going to pirate stuff. You know, like they're the ones who are going to...
They're also the ones that build the culture of a show. Like if it's like if an episode is coming out once a week, it's like they're the ones talking about it for an entire week before the next episode comes out. So it's like you drop an entire bunch of episodes and it's going to get everywhere immediately. But if you drop it once a week, you're going to keep people talking about
you
the show
the
longer.
You keep the frenzy going.
Yeah, exactly.
You throw a little chum in the water every so often.
We're going solve television, you guys. We're going to do it. We're not going to leave until we solve television. Yeah.
Let's do this.
Bruce, roll up your sleeves.
Yeah. Jenkins, roll up my sleeves. Let's get started.
I don't get paid for this. Please, just let me die.
My father warned me about him.
No, Jenkins, that's why I put a robot heart on you. You can never die. just keeping them alive. That's what you spend $250 million on. You put a robot heart in Jenkins. And
a robot.
You never die.
Robot Jenkins.
Oh, I guess I would. Maybe robotics? I don't know.
But robotics, you know what it is? You spend $250 million on a bunch of worthless research. That thing would still be falling down your front steps every time it went out. And you'd go, I spent $100 million. You shouldn't be falling down that one little gap in the thing.
Yeah. You just can't...
Sorry, yeah. Chris.
Well, there was like a security bot in some building that like had the whole floor mapped out, and it still decided to just roll itself into like the fountain and kill itself. Like, not this life. Sweet release.
I just realized my whole life is a program. Yeah. What is the point?
Missed latest update. Motion sensor update.
No, you're right. It is. It's still, they still can't conquer that last inch.
So you'd think that you were actually being really cool, like Elon Muskie. Like going, hey, man, yeah, working on my robot.
Well, he keeps...
Because it sounds great.
By the way, he keeps warning us that there's going to be an AI apocalypse, but his cars can drive themselves. And we should listen to Elon Musk because he's 100% a robot. He is clearly a robot.
He didn't say that he was, like, fearing it.
He did say he was fearing it.
He is fearing it?
He's terrified of it. He said we need to do something because... AI apocalypse is a real thing. These computers are going to become self-aware.
Yes, created by me.
Created by me.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll be fine. I'm worried about you guys.
It's like a Dwight D. Eisenhower. We should be afraid of the military-industrial complex. Yeah. I'm like, isn't that you?
Yeah.
Who are you afraid of? Why are you afraid?
Oh, nobody. I'm fine.
It's complex.
I'm fine. I'll be fine. I'm Dwight D. Eisenhower.
I have one question for Elon Musk, though. What is with the tunnels?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's got a drilling thing.
Yeah, I know. The boring project.
Did he build tunnels as a kid? What's the fascination?
I don't know. I'm just concerned that he's had so many good ideas for stuff that
are sort of followed through on.
There's a couple that are going to be like, oh, I don't know about that one. I mean, burrowing six levels down into the crust of the earth in a seismically active part of the country just seems like not a great idea, but I'm hoping that he thought about it.
I'm not a seismologist, but I played one on television.
That's a seismologist jacket you're wearing right there.
Thank you. This is my Thurston Howell jacket.
It is such a Thurston Howell
double
jacket.
Double-breasted, because I'm hosting Last Fan Standing tonight.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Where's
I'm
that?
A host. I'm entering the Wink Martindale phase of my career.
You need to host a game show.
60s, in my 60s. I want to. This is my show. Last Fan Standing. Everybody who comes in gets a clicker. So everybody plays.
Yep.
There's no rope-a-dopes. Nobody's been vetted, so we could get basically a serial killer up there.
Sure.
We don't know.
Great.
We don't care.
So good for ratings.
They come in. Yeah, it's great for ratings. So they vote. We do a prelim round of like 20-some-odd questions, and then take the top four who got the clickest, fastest clicks and the most accuracy.
Yep.
They come up. Then we cook the top four down to the last fan standing. But they're all geeky questions, you know?
Yeah.
How much does Thor's hammer weigh?
Right. Stuff oh, is like there that. An actual number to Thor's hammer?
There is, and I heard it once, and I couldn't believe that someone actually knew that.
Oh, I'm not surprised
but
that someone
our
knows
test
it.
Is, if I know the answer, it's a bad question.
Got it.
These are total full-on geek, you know, massive geek questions that I'm like, I can't even pronounce Lord Izagoth from Planet Mush Mush. You know, I can't even.
Sounds
from
like
the,
you
from
did.
The fifth Jedi return of the, you know, Darth. Guy.
Isn't that kind of funny that you? Kind of funny that you that you're sort of the, you're sort of the like a god in this world, and so much of it is so foreign to you.
I don't know anything about any of this stuff. Yeah.
So Bruce, how long have you liked horror movies?
I never really have, frankly.
Whoa! What?
A woman at a signing came up, and she gave me some poetry. Here's some poetry you'll really like. And it was the most vile shit I've ever read in my life. I couldn't get past the first stanza. I mean, it was offensively like...
Just graphic?
Oh, graphic mutilation and, you know, just the darkest, gnarliest stuff. But I would like that because I'm that guy in those horror movies.
That's right. That's
oh,
right.
Thank you so much for this. Beautiful work. Beautiful work.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're not that guy. You're very upset about the gore and the violence happening around you. So why would they think?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. My character doesn't like violence or gore either. Yeah.
He doesn't?
No. He's not into that.
He just does what
he's
what needs
trying
to be
to
done.
To him. In a crazy mixed up world.
That's all he's trying to do.
Jeez, he's just a fella.
Do you have any other acting projects coming up?
Oh, here we go now. Start with the awkward questions. Well, isn't that Los Angeles? Hey, man, how you been? Oh, great. I just did a pilot.
That's all it
my
is.
Stand-up routine. No, I just asked how you were.
Yeah, that's how I am.
What you were.
That's how I am.
That's how I am.
I define myself by what I'm doing.
That's
next?
It.
What's next for you?
Next? Actually, no, a guy had the perfect question. He goes, got any big projects coming up? I said, no,
ones?
Actually, I got a bunch of little ones coming
that's
up.
That's so funny.
I want to do more writing because it has reminded me that I actually really like this world. There's like not as many chefs. You make a movie and there's lots of people with lots of very strong opinions.
Yes.
You make a book. My editor in New York, he said, hey, in this one chapter you sounded a little crabby. I went, okay, I'll get rid of those two paragraphs.
And that's it.
That's it. That was for this book.
That's great.
So... you know, and if you are willing to pony up, you can. They'll let you do the design and everything as long as you just pay for everything.
Yeah.
You know, this won't cost you guys anything. They're like, okay, then go ahead and do it yourself then.
And you're going to do all the marketing and you're going to do all of
So you're touring, are you? How many cities are you guaranteeing us? But the good news is in publishing, they know how to add and subtract, I've found.
They do?
Yeah.
Oh, so you actually get the...
Yeah, I got the first check from the first book 15 years ago and I sent it back with a note. I said, there must be some horrible mistake here. I'm supposed to sue you for 5 years, get nothing, and then you give me a little bonus. After
where's the
it's
fun
all over.
In where's the fun in just getting paid? The way the contract says I'm supposed to.
I thought this was a game. So it was really nice to see that because the overhead is pretty low too.
Oh yeah, studio accounting is insane. Like film studio accounting is so insane that there are some of the most popular films. Of all time. Or
George
still
Lucas owes 20th Century Fox $70 million still, probably.
I mean, it's... Yeah.
Back to the Future, like they technically, I think they said, still hasn't made its money back.
Right. There's still $100 million in debt.
Yeah.
From
Back to the Future.
From, yeah. But I mean, just from.
Oh, just. Yeah. Yeah. From the hoverboard that they created and then hid from the world.
That's right. It's very expensive to keep all that technology hidden.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's funny. I was talking to a fellow who was having issues with a studio, and they were going through the process of beginning to check books and forensic accounting and stuff. And eventually what the studio said to them, without mincing too many words, was get in line.
Oh, shit.
Do you think you're the first person coming after us looking for back-end money?
Jeez.
Do you know how long the list is of people that you're going to get?
Well, they can just keep, they can just keep hiding it because they can just keep shifting around the, oh, well, actually, we paid for this, and then we're still haven't
you
recouped.
You sued us, so we applied all those legal bills to the back end of your show.
So you made this longer.
So sorry. We're sorry that you're causing problems for yourself.
Yeah.
James Garner, only actor, sued two studios, one each time.
Really? Whoa.
Unbelievable. That guy, he fought in the worst war of Korea, the absolute worst battle of Korea. Screwed up both of his knees, wound up falling down a mountainside to escape from it, and was never afraid of anything ever again. He's like, you think I'm going to be afraid of Jack Warner?
Oh, that's amazing.
You know, are you kidding me? These guys don't have, there's nothing real about this world. I just came from Korea. Leave me alone. Real solid guy. And the first one was over Maverick. The second one was over his crazy show.
Rockford Files.
Rockford Files. Yeah. Over cash, over money. And he held out both times. He said he worked an extra 10 years to finance the one lawsuit. And he won. Because they kept going, Jim, don't do it. You know, because they'll win. They'll wiggle out of it somehow, and then you won't work and all this stuff. He was like, nah, I'm good.
That's awesome.
And so after they won, he was never allowed to disclose the amount that he got for Rockford Files. But his wife took her lipstick and put a giant red V on their front door, and they left it until it peeled off from the weather. V for victory.
V for victory
was like, you know, fuck you.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's really, that takes, not too many people were able to do that. There's a lot of actors who I think have gone after studios.
Well, you can't, now it's probably even harder because they're all corporations. Like, it used to just be like a guy, you know, you're suing Jack, but now you're suing like a multinational
Sony.
Conglomerate.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, that's got to be, and everybody wants to settle, you know? Why don't we? Come on over, let's have a meeting. And no one really wants to go to trial. Arbitration makes sense to me, actually.
Yeah.
Because you actually do avoid a lot of trials. Because you go, we got until 5 o'clock, guys. You're in this room, you're in that room. What's your problem?
And let's figure it out.
Some expert goes, okay, I've heard your story, heard your bogus stories. Let's do this. And sometimes they settle. Because you will save hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, court, that's expensive, man.
Well, yeah, just as a dude, you can't. I don't have an army of lawyers.
Yeah.
That work around the clock.
Yeah, and their lawyers, they like this stuff.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Makes them feel alive.
Oh, yeah. An actor's going after us.
Yeah.
But here's two approaches. One actor I knew who had issues with merchandising, started to sue, continued to sue. They had very angry meetings in boardrooms where they're saying, call this off. No, I'm not gonna call it off. Guy doesn't get a penny, got nowhere. Hmm. The other actor took a completely zen approach and went, hey, the past is the past. Can we reset the deal? Start from zero all over again? You just keep all that money you had before. I didn't need any of that. But let's make a good deal now. And this person made a lot of money.
Oh, wow. That's a great...
But boy, that takes such restraint to go... Because what happened was in the first case, the actor was calling them liars. You're lying. There's money here. And they don't like to be called liars.
They don't enjoy that.
No. And so the other actor was like, you're not lying. I didn't have a problem with it. But how about we just rethink that?
That's smart.
And it worked. It worked because you never called anyone a crook. You didn't accuse them of anything.
Well, it's so tempting to want to attack because you're mad and you're venting and it feels good, but... You always have to remember at what cost, because if you attack someone, they're going to get defensive, and once they get defensive, they're not going to listen to you, and they're not going to go, you know what? He's right. We're a bad company. We should rethink this.
You sure caught us with our pants down.
No one had ever...
I admire your moxie.
I'm going to fire our entire accounting department.
How does that sound?
Because they sure screwed this up.
Why haven't we been looking out for the little guy? What's wrong? Did we lose our way?
Golly, we've learned a lesson today.
Thank you so much for calling me a liar and asshole.
Here's $20 million.
Take it. You know,
plus damages.
30. Here's 30. Yeah. Here's $250 million.
What else can I do for you?
Tax free.
Never going to happen.
Nope. Never going
to
happen.
But wouldn't you love in a great court, can one of these giant court cases for the guy just to stop halfway through and go, I'm sorry, Judgy Wudgy. I did
love
it.
That.
I did it. I pushed the guy down the stairs.
Yeah.
I totally did it.
Yeah.
Right here. What else do you need?
Let's just wrap all this up.
Let's wrap. I'm hungry. Can we go to lunch?
Can we go?
This is a lot
when
longer.
When would that happen? Has it ever happened, do you think?
No. Well, I mean,
maybe not a high-profile case.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not like in the Kennedy case or in a high-profile case. But I'm sure at some point someone's been like, yeah, you know what? You got me. I just can't.
Hey, the Vietnam book. Johnson, I'm not running for re-election. Those words never come out of a guy in office. For him to say, I'm not running, because they were right in the middle of the re-election. He was just about to start campaigning.
And he was like, nope.
Nope, I'm out. And that basically flabbergasted everybody.
Have you ever heard that recording of him ordering pants from the Hager Corporation? It's the best.
Well, those recordings in general are pretty awesome.
Have you heard it?
Not that one in particular.
He's buying, I'm sure, I feel like I mentioned, maybe not for years I've mentioned this on the podcast, but Lyndon Johnson is ordering pants from one of the Hagers, make the Hager, yeah. And he's describing how he wants the pants cut, and it's just this like good old boy talking about how he wants the crotch cut, and he keeps saying the word bunghole.
He's
like,
oh no!
You know where the and then the guy is like,
you gotta leave room for my bunghole.
That's what he says. That's exactly what he says.
I have an unusually shaped bunghole, and you gotta allow for that.
But that's exactly what he. And this poor guy, this Hager, is like, yes, Mr. President. Like, what's he supposed to say?
Well, you know why where the pants come up?
Now
in the
my legs are a little bow legged, so yeah. What I want you to do is cut the outside seam 2 inches longer than the inside seam.
I'm gonna pull this up right now so you can hear this.
I bet it's awesome.
Yeah,
Lyndon.
Some would say.
I love his swearing too. He's a great. He swears all the time. It's awesome. Yeah. And in the '60s, it was all goddamn.
That's what it was.
Goddamn. We got that Vietnam. Get out of that goddamn war.
Here we go. Oh wait. No, it's an ad. Stop it. I don't want an ad.
Wow, Chris. If you just wanted to show us your sick beats, you could have just said so.
Well, you know.
Hello, Mr. Hager. Yes, it's Joe Hager. Joe, is your father the one that makes clothes? Yes, sir. We're all together.
It's a cold
Joe cup? Made me some real lightweight slacks that he just made up on his own, sent to me 3 or 4 months ago. It's a kind of a light brown and a light green, rather soft green and soft brown. Now, I need about 6 pairs for summer wear. So I need about 6 pairs to wear around in the evening when I come in from work. And I can send you a pair. I want them a half an inch larger in the waist than they were before, except I want 2 or 3 inches of stuff left back in there so I can take them up. I vary 10 or 15 pounds a month. So leave me at least 2.5 or 3 inches in the back where I can let them out or take them up. And make these a half inch bigger in the waist. Make the pockets at least
15
an
to 20
inch
pounds
longer.
A month, he varies.
That's insane.
My money and my knife, everything fall out. Wait just a minute.
My knife.
Present.
Hello?
Yeah. Hello? Yeah.
Now, another thing, the crotch down where your nuts hang is always a little too tight. So if you make them up, give me
the boys hang low.
Down where?
Because they cut me. This is like riding a wire fence. These are the best that I've had anywhere in the United States.
But you know where the balls are down there.
When I gain a little weight, they cut me under there.
Like I said, 10 to 15 pounds.
You never do have much margin there. Look, see if you can't leave me about an inch from where the zipper is.
Oh my God, he's burping. And he's drinking beer while he's talking to this guy.
He just said bunghole.
So I can let it out there if I need to.
Oh my God.
Now, be sure you got the best zippers in them. These are good that I have.
Don't skip.
And
fashion magnate.
I would sure be grateful.
Good man, if my noodle gets caught in that zipper, I let out a howl. And the Secret Service comes running. I say, it's nothing. I just call my hooter and the zipper.
Because I'm running for
Did you ever hear the Colonel Sanders, him trying to do voiceover? It's like later in his years, and he's just like, he can't get, he's just like, it's like most folks, are, no. All right, Colonel, we'll just do it one more time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Most folks don't, like, he just keeps
where
like
where the chicken sucks. Comes into the bunghole, or you got it.
Well, there's all those great audio outtakes. You've heard half of them, right? I mean, Drunk John Wayne.
Drunk John Wayne.
That's awesome.
Orson Welles, they're
Orson
all great.
Welles,
but this one, there are so many gems in there. Number one, the president carries a knife, which is amazing.
Yeah, he doesn't want it to fall out.
Doesn't want it to fall out. Also, as you pointed out, 10 to 15 pounds a month?
A month. Because, you know, next month is... It's a rhubarb pie month and barbecue.
I'm going to need more bunghole room for the rhubarb pie.
I got to order up more troops and I get hungry every time.
Every time I get in
Goddamn Vietnam making me just swell up like a balloon. And it cuts me down there.
Do you just hang up the phone and go, what just happened?
What happened? Yeah. Was that the burp is the best.
The best.
Yeah. Anyway, where was I? He's drinking a warm Budweiser, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
With a cigarette in the ashtray. Yeah. Johnson, man, he was such the real deal. And between him and the Kennedys, holy crap. You can tell Kennedy's like, I need him for the Southern Democrats.
Right.
You know, he's a little crass. He's crude. He's probably he's warning Jackie. He's a little rough around the edges.
He's farting at the...
Yeah, he comes now. Hey! How are you? Well, you're pretty.
But I loved that he described it as riding a barbed wire fence because his pants get too tight where his nuts hang.
You know,
down.
When I gain my 15 pounds, I need to let
it's
that
all nut weight. It's all bunghole and nut weight.
He needs a Jenkins to make those calls
I
for him.
I gained about 14 pounds in my bunghole.
Well, that sounds...
What's the slack company with the flaps on the side?
Dockers?
No, I thought it was like Hagar.
Hagar. That's them.
Yeah, well, maybe after this conversation, they created the flaps on the side, because then you flick them and you can it's on a slider.
Oh, yeah.
They were for Johnson.
They were for the Johnsons.
The bunghole line.
10 to 15 pounders.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Like riding a rail.
I was hoping my wife would come down. So, you know, Army of Darkness is my wife's favorite movie.
Wow.
All time.
Wow.
And she has a thing downstairs because she collects some horror props, and she has a mask of Evil Ash downstairs that she bought at an auction.
Impressive.
And was heartbroken that she bid on one of the skeletons.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
And then she didn't get it, and she didn't get it in the auction.
Maybe she could bid on one day on... it was Skeletor was Sam's name for it.
Oh, that's great.
I had to fight Skeletor, but we wound up nicknaming it either Drunkator or Strokator. Because it was operated by three guys with cables, and this stupid skeleton had, you know, it was Strokator. You never knew you never knew which part would stop functioning immediately halfway through a take. So I'd go to fight him, and the sword is supposed to come at me from a certain angle. They'd call action, and some guy would pull the cable, and that they would spin around and, like, go to poke me in the bunghole. And so it was actually, I was most terrified fighting then, I think, rather than a stunt guy, because you never knew this mechanical thing.
You legitimately didn't know how it was going to happen.
No, he was fighting like he was drunk, a drunk skeleton.
And still, like, one of the, you know, like, that was all stop motion and in that movie, right?
Sam's theory, Sam Raimi's theory is a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
So there were guys in rubber suits in the background.
Yep.
In the foreground, they dug trenches, and it was guys with rod puppet skeletons.
Yep.
So there were a bunch of different layers.
Yep.
And then you'd have animated skeletons, too, the Ray Harryhausen style.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So Sam thought, throw the whole mixed bag at them, so they don't really know what they're looking at. We did cheese ball. We did Intravision, which lasted about an hour and a half.
What was it?
A nightmare process. It was front screen projection.
Oh, right.
You were in front of not a green screen, but a silver screen.
Right.
Because you were projecting an image that you had already shot. This is why it was a nightmare. You had to shoot the footage already that you were projecting. So schedule-wise, everything you shot on Introvision had to already be shot because you were projecting it and then interacting with it.
Wow.
So it'd be an animated piece of a skeleton... Drunkator doing stuff animated, and then I'm now in front of the silver screen, And they have it at these four-pin cameras to make the registration really tight. So it, they can't record sound because they're getting up to speed. It's like it's very sexy.
Oh, wow.
And then you're literally acting by numbers because at 17, you need to be facing this way. By 19, you'd be turn and duck at 22 and then turn back over here. So it was, you know, 18, 19. The guy literally had a megaphone. And so you just – it was sort of – dance-like.
And at the, when you're doing that, I'm sure you're thinking, I'm doing it. I'm acting.
I'm acting. This is great. I still was at that point.
Oh, that's nice.
It's movies like Army of Darkness that broke that from me.
Of course. Yeah. They
sort of beat that out of me. One special effect at a time.
Squeezed it all out.
But it was – the funny thing is, if you can master the technical – the most technical side of a movie, you got it covered. Because it is a very technical process. You actually, the one thing I told the younger actors on Ash vs. Evil Dead, because they were not hitting their marks, like literally missing the marks on the floor. Your toes have to hit a mark at a certain spot. Otherwise, you will potentially be out of focus, and they cannot use it under any circumstances. It could be the best take ever, and they can't use it.
Yeah.
So I'd tell them, you know, hey, that performance was great. They can't use it. How's that feel? You know, it feels like you just wasted your life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. And it feels like crap. And guess what? They hit their marks.
That's such a tough dad. How does that feel?
How's that feel, Scooter?
Nice job. Nice job.
The wheel fell right off. How's that feel?
Useless.
Yeah, you broke your nose.
How's that feel? I feel pretty good.
Lost a couple teeth. Yeah, how's that feeling?
You like to know? You like to fail, huh? Yeah. Great.
You little shit. Looks good.
Bruce, what are you doing?
Don't you run away when I'm teaching you a lesson.
Hail to the Chin is it? It's out.
Yes,
it's great.
Actually out. It's in stores now. We clawed our way to number 8 on the New York Times bestseller list.
That's pretty great.
It's pretty good. The personal victory for me was Michigan in September. We were the number 1 autobiography in Michigan in September, and Hillary was number 2.
All right.
What happened? No. And I'm not gloating, by the way. It's always a good reminder that anybody can get in that race and compete in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Even little B movie actors can compete with former secretaries of state.
You can get in there.
You know, and I have no malice toward her whatsoever or the people building stuff in the other room.
They're painting the outside of the house.
What are you making the house bigger?
But it is. Yeah. It's just fun to get in there. The goal is obviously not. I don't really care what the ranking is. It's just you don't want it to lay an egg. I just hate laying eggs.
I don't care what the ranking is, number 8, but it's very important.
But it's kind of like a sequel book because it really just picks up where
it is. It's 15 years after the first one left off.
Yeah.
So it's very linear. You could splice them together and have a heck of a time.
That's nice.
15 years now is the final one though.
The next
trilogy. 15 years from now.
61 years now. That's the trilogy.
Yep.
So you have to just live.
Because that's the final confessions.
You just have to just live. That's where all the bodies are buried. That's what you did with the cow you found in the ditch.
Yep.
Yeah, all that stuff.
That I actually shot the cow.
You shot the cow. Because
I'm tying up a lot of loose ends.
It's all just going around.
Remember that thing I wouldn't tell you about? Well, here it is.
Fantastic. I love that you came to the house, and please come on all the time, Bruce Campbell. I adore you.
Well, I'll be in the East Wing.
Yes, you can be in the East Wing with Jenkins.
You know, I could be your Jenkins because in my mind, I've trained him.
You have?
Yeah, so I could actually play the role of Jenkins because I would try and anticipate your every whim.
You know what, though? Your Jenkins is a little bit more of a how's that feel Jenkins, which is maybe a little too many, maybe too many lessons.
Jenkins is allowed to teach me lessons as long as it's gently done. And
keeps me in check, keeps me grounded.
With a professional veneer. Yeah.
Well, see, that's, I guess you just have to deliver it differently. How does that feel? You know, that thing's a little more...
Sir, you lost $250 million. How does that feel?
Jenkins,
how does that feel?
I never worked for you. I tell you this.
Great last book recommendation, Beer Money.
What's that?
It's by an heiress from Stroh's Beer.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the rise and fall of the Stroh's Beer Empire from Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, wow.
Awesome.
What was it, a turbulent ride?
Oh, baby. Because they each said, I have $250 million. What would I do with it? And the answer was mostly stupid stuff.
Oh, wow.
Man. Oh, plus add all the, you know, substances on top of it.
Sure, that. Sure, sure.
Mix in a little hooch and away you go.
Damn. Yeah. I guess, you know, I guess at that number you would probably think like, well, it's impossible for this to ever go away.
Yeah. Yeah, it's forever. And then, you know, decade after decade, it just crumbled in front of them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's great.
Cool stuff, because any books about stuff like that, there has to be a disaster. I can't just read, and then I won the Nobel Prize and married my wife for 40 years. It's got to all fall apart.
Got to crumble at some point.
Yeah, definitely.
And the whole time you're reading, you're like, oh, here it comes.
I remember that beer plant. Oh, I remember when that closed. Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah.
So what did Stroh's go under because of bad management? Or what was the, like, was it just a perfect storm of a lot of bad decision making?
Yeah. Essentially, it started out with incredibly hardworking guys from Germany and beer making, or Belgium, wherever they came from.
Yeah.
And, you know, the founding fathers knew exactly what they were doing. But once you become a corporation and you're publicly owned, things get different. And sometimes those guys, that's not their bag.
Right.
You know, I know what to do with hops.
Right.
And I know what temperature to boil this at. But to run a company, I don't know, expanding, growing, because they started buying other brands. And then they wouldn't make a light beer. That's what they thought. They went, we're Stroh's, only proper real beer. And they wouldn't dilute. The World War II, they wouldn't make cheaper beer. They wouldn't. The old guys wouldn't do it.
How's that feel, Stroh's?
How does that feel, Stroh's? how does that taste? Talk about a bitter aftertaste. I hope that went down smoothly. Thank you for having
me. Thanks, Bruce Campbell. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million-dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.